This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared, and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enterfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enterfood.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hey, hey, good morning. This is Colorado Ron, and welcome to Backwood Home Self-Reliance Exposed. Unfortunately, Bubba is not with us this morning. He is traveling, and he's going to try and call in here in just a little bit, but I believe he's stuck in between planes right now. He tried to get to Singapore and didn't make it, so he's on his way back home. So anyway, I wanted to start off by talking about a couple of things. Last week, we talked about, I had to do a follow-up this week on fasting. And so last week I started just a water fast, and from the research that I have found, a water fast that goes beyond 3 days will reset your system, flushes your system out, and resets your system. So any foods that you might be you might have an addiction to, such as sugar and things like that, you will no longer have those addictions. So I went I actually went a little bit longer than that. I went 9 days, and I feel great. So, everybody said, what about vitamins and all that stuff? Trust me, my body has plenty for my body to burn. So I did not miss out on any of that stuff. It was a great experience. I did nothing but distilled water for 9 days, and it worked out awesome. So research it online. Everybody do your own due diligence if that's something you're interested in doing. But I found it hugely beneficial for me. I didn't do it for weight loss, so I don't know how much I've lost, but I need a belt with everything I wear now. So, it worked out awesome. I enjoy it. I feel so much better. And the first meal that I had, let me tell you, it tasted so good. I never knew the wonderful flavor. This sounds crazy, but the wonderful flavor of lettuce. I know that sounds so silly, but just to eat a piece of lettuce and savor it was just amazing. It was so good. And then I had an apple. Oh, it was the best apple ever, and I'm sure it was just a normal apple to everybody else. But to me, it was delish. And so Scott challenged me, Bubba and Jack Spirico challenged me to check out the paleo diet. So I did check it out. I researched it in the evenings every night this week. I think it's interesting. I think it's something I want to take on, and so I will be doing that. We have and the site that I found the most information on, if this is something you're interested in, I would check out Mark's Daily Apple. It was by far the most informative website on this particular diet that I have found. And when you go there, use the search. He has a search engine, an advanced search engine up on the upper right. That was by far the most useful tool. That was the most he pulled that off better than anybody I've ever seen, better than any website. I could search literally anything I wanted to on there, and it pulled up an article that he's written. I mean, he's got a ton of information on there. I pulled up agave, I pulled up apples, I pulled up bananas, anything that I thought, well, what about this or what about that, what about eating steak? And so I pulled it up, and he had an article on it. So anyway, check that out if you're interested. It's amazing. As far as the article goes, and as far as what Jack Spirko was talking about this last week, if you didn't listen to that, by the way, go ahead and download that. Jack Spirko, we touched on that and talked about it for, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes about the paleo diet, and it was very interesting. And it was kind of my first introduction to it. So we went on and on about it a little bit, and the challenge was basically to look into it and see if it was something I was going to tackle. So I basically researched it all week, and like I said, Mark's Daily Apple is probably by far the most useful tool in that research. So go ahead and check that out if that's something you're interested in. On another note, as you know, I'm Colorado Ron. I'm based out of Colorado. And Colorado is on fire. I mean, this place is lit up. We've got fires going in every direction. I could look out my back window. I got a pretty good view of the Rocky Mountains. And so I can look out. I can stand out on my back porch and see, smoke trails from probably three different fires going on right now. We got one in Boulder, one in Fort Collins, and, of course, the worst one, is down at Colorado Springs, and I can actually, because the wind changes and stuff, we're picking up smoke from that one as well. The you know, it's not so smoky that I can't breathe or choke on it or I smell wood burning all the time. But I mean, I could see the smoke up in the air and I could see it along the horizon. The one in Colorado Springs is pretty bad. My brother actually lives down in Colorado Springs, and he is probably, I want to say, 2-3 miles from some of those neighborhoods that got burned completely down. And he posted up some pictures up on Facebook, and it is just incredible. I mean, whole neighborhoods, just normal houses, normal neighborhoods wiped out, bam. And so I thought that was kind of crazy and got me thinking that everybody needs to you need to make sure that you double-check your 72-hour kits. If you don't have one, get one. That 72-hour kit should contain certain things. Obviously, you got food, water, and clothing. Change of clothes. One of the things that people don't think about, and I'd like to talk about, is scan a copy of all your important documents and put it on a thumb drive, such as birth certificates, driver's license, and those types of things, and keep that in your go bag as well, in case you have to go and lose your house burns down and you can't get to those important documents. At least you have a copy of them. You have a copy of it all, and you can go down and get new copies with that. So very important to scan all that so that you don't lose all that. The other thing is obviously, hopefully you have a flashlight in there. Check your batteries, check your food, check for expiration dates. Trust me, food that's been in there way too long. One of the things that we do as a family, you know, we have six kids. So one of the things that we do is twice a year, we have a set date. One of the dates is, let's say, Super Bowl. The kids get to break out their 72-hour kits and eat everything that's in them. Now, two things happen with that. First of all, you don't have any expired food. Well, there's three things. The first thing is that you don't have any expired food. Second thing that happens is the kids enjoy themselves, have fun. It's like a big camp out. And third, you figure out what doesn't work. So, you know, if 6 months of and you pull out gummy bears out of the bag and they're all stuck together and it's kind of half melted and doesn't work, then you know not to put that in there next time, right? So anyway, to do is to know. So I suggest that everybody try that and go through all that and so that you can find the best meals that to have in there. What we've found as far as the best meals, snack foods, is really jars of peanut butter, crackers, pretzels, those types of things. You know, and then we graham crackers, kids like those. You know, those types of things seem to work. They're easy to eat, and you know, cans of tuna fish. You know, things like that. So, but give it a try. Matter of fact, actually, not cans of tuna fish. I take that back. My wife puts in there bags of tuna fish. Everything you put in there, you should not need a can opener for. My wife makes sure that everything is easy rip open, so we're not having to deal with that or worry about that. And then, lastly, I wanted to talk about, and this is a good point that was mentioned on our Facebook page, Self Reliance Expo Facebook page, was rendezvous points. What happens if you come home from work and your neighborhood is burned down? Where's your wife and my brother was talking about the cell phones were all gridlocked down there. You could hardly get out on a cell phone in Colorado Springs. So where are you going to meet your husband or wife? That should be an important question. And that should be something that you guys look at. We personally have a place that we meet, and it's about 2 miles away. So you can walk it if you needed to. Hopefully we both have vehicles and can just drive there. And a lot of people say, well, what about the kids in school? Well, first, the most important part is the team get back together. So first things first, my wife and I meet at our said location. And then say our kids are in school, then now that we're a team, we take off and go knock it out. And each one of the kids have a location at the school. If something goes awry, we've already talked to them in advance. If something goes crazy at school and kids are everywhere, I don't know why that would happen, but if it did, there's a spot away from traffic that's kind of out of the way, such as, you know, behind the school, there's a ditch, you know, and I told one of my kids, see that ditch right there, you see the telephone pole right there, you meet me at that telephone pole, no matter what. And so if something like that happens, we know that we can drive straight to that telephone pole. If the kid is second-guessing themselves and they don't know if they should go out there and your truck is sitting there, then they know and then they take off and run and they can see you. So make sure that it's someplace that's visible from the school in case they're having second thoughts if they're small. If they're a young kid, they might have a second thought and be a little nervous about going out to that telephone pole. But if they see your truck or your vehicle out there, it gives them the added encouragement to go do it. So those are a couple of the tips on that. It's been nuts, though. I can't believe the fires. I cannot believe all the stuff that's going on out there. And just, half of Colorado seems to be on fire. We also have one on the Western Slope that I just heard about. So they're just popping up everywhere. It's all and almost, I believe all of them are from lightning. So, you know, keep an eye out on that stuff. And then, of course, we've got floods in other places in the country. So you just never know what's going to happen. So that's the reason why we talk about being prepared. It is important. You just, you know, I live in a location, like I said, Rocky Mountains. Never thought anything would happen here. Seems to be pretty safe. Weather's pretty calm. And 2 years ago, we had a tornado rip through about 20 miles north of us and totally devastated several neighborhoods up there. And that was kind of unheard of and something that just never happens. And it's just out of the blue. So keep that in mind. We've also seen, we have a meteorologist that lives right up the road here in the neighborhood here down the block. And I was talking to him one day and one of the things that kind of surprised me was he said that you can sit out there and see a storm coming in and see those storm clouds and from several miles away, lightning shoot out of that. He said they've seen lightning come out of the storm clouds, head a certain direction, let's say east, head east for 2 miles and then come down and zap and light a neighborhood on fire. And so you just never know. The best thing to do is just be prepared. That's all you can do. Everything else is out of your control. So get your rendezvous points together for your family, and make sure you got your go bags. Make sure you have a vehicle bag in case you can't make it back home, and have locations for your kids to meet. So we also have passwords for our kids. So that's another cool idea is, if somebody comes to pick them up, they have to know the password. The family password is what we call it. So nobody else knows that family password except our kids. And if somebody comes and says, hey, your parents said to pick you up, what's the password? So another great idea that we use with our kids. So let's see here. What else do we need to go over? We often talk about our food storage, water storage, and things like that, and we don't really concentrate on the emergency prep stuff. Another thing that you need to make sure you do is always keep your fuel tank at least half full. You know, what's funny is Bubba and I have gone on several trips, and one of his crazy ideas is he goes and he will not go past the halfway mark on the gas tank without pulling over and getting gas. And I find that funny, and it's a habit that's been instilled in him since he was a boy. He says his father did it, and or his grandfather, I believe it was his grandfather that did it. And so he always pulls over and gets gas at a half tank mark, even when we're traveling. But that's a great idea, and it's a great habit to get into. So keep that in mind. Always have a half a tank of gas. A couple of years ago, we had about a 6-foot snowstorm that just dumped and closed down the highways, and people were stuck out there overnight in their vehicles. And now, wouldn't it suck to be the person out there with an eighth of a tank of gas, sitting out in the middle of the highway? So keep that in mind. Never be caught. Never be at an eighth of a tank of gas. First of all, it's bad for your vehicle. You're sucking up the sediment on the bottom of the tank through your fuel filter. So you're burning up. You're shortening the lifespan on your fuel filter. And then secondly, obviously, the more important part is the always being prepared. And having eighth of a tank of gas will not get you very far. So those are the main things. We've got, I need to talk about our guests today. We have two guests today. First one will be Jackie Clay. And everybody knows who Jackie Clay is. So she is awesome. I love talking with Jackie. And so she'll be on. She'll be our first guest. Our second guest will be David. He goes by Southern Prepper 1. Everybody knows him as Southern Prepper 1 from YouTube. And so that is that's the name he goes by online. But his real name is David Kobler. And he is out of the East, and so he'll be online shortly. And he'll be our second guest. So anyway, I'd like to one of the cool things about David or Southern Prepper 1 is his background. He's got a lot of military background. He knows a lot about security, and when I was out there and I got to sit and talk with him, I got to talk to him face to face, and you could tell he had a lot of knowledge, but also it was really cool to see that he does tours. And you can actually, if you were out there on the East Coast area, it might be very wise for you to go and take a tour, because he will take you and show you locations where people have secured locations out there and show you different ideas for your household. So keep that in mind. That's a pretty cool little deal. I wish I would have had time to take a tour, but I didn't. So the other thing I wanted to talk about going back to the fires. One of the things that a lot of people are trying to figure out is on the 72-hour kits was their water. Obviously, 3 days worth of water and carrying that is a little heavy. One of the things that I do is I only carry 1 day worth of water, but I also carry Berkey Sport Light in all of my 72-hour kits. So just because you have to have water doesn't mean you need to carry it with you. Usually. And then it's important to know where the location of all the water around you. For instance, in Google Earth or Google Maps is awesome for that. Pull up your address and look around. A lot of people haven't even thought of this, but you look around your neighborhood and find out where all the swimming pools are. Okay, so sometimes there's a swimming pool, sometimes there's not. And if there's a swimming pool, note that. And then also look where the nearest creeks are, look where the nearest water sources are all around you, so that you have a mental note of that, or better yet, print that out and put it in your go bag, so that you have locations within walking distance of your home that you can quickly grab some water with your Berkey Sports. So very important tidbit to keep track of. Okay, so we are up against our first break, so let's do that, and we will bring in Jackie Clay right after the break. Thanks. I'll talk to you guys later.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze-dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine's Self-Reliance Exposed. I'm your host, Colorado Ron. Unfortunately, Bubba Da Vinci is not with us this morning, and we are back, and our next guest will be Jackie Clay. Jackie, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. How are you, Jackie?
I'm dandy. It's going to be a hot one again today, though.
What's the temperatures up there?
Well, we've been having mid-80s, and that's kind of unusual for us, but you get what you get.
About it. We're in hundreds over here. It's been crazy.
Wow.
Did you see on the news? I don't know if you saw this, but I was shocked to see Kansas hit 118.
Wow. No, I hadn't seen that. That's terrible.
That's like Death Valley. Sheesh.
Man. Yeah, I'm glad to be in northern Minnesota.
Oh, man. So northern Minnesota technically doesn't get that hot, does it, usually?
No, usually, 80s is about it. Once in a while we'll hit 90, or maybe once a year it'll hit 100, but that's real unusual. And then it cools down at night. We're like the mountains, we are so far north. In the evening, it'll cool down to like 50, so that really helps a lot. You can sleep.
So you're in Minnesota, so that's the land of 10,000 lakes, isn't it?
They only count the big ones. There's a whole lot more than the 10,000, but that's just the big lakes.
Wow. Wow. Now, do you have to deal with a lot of mosquitoes up there?
We're very lucky because we're on a big gravel ridge, and it drops down to a big beaver pond, and you'd think we'd be just buried in mosquitoes. But actually, because we're up on this ridge, we get a little breeze, and the mosquitoes kind of stay down by the beaver pond.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
How far is civilization?
Civilization. Well, define civilization. Our nearest town is 16 miles away, and it's got a population of 600. Well, actually, it went down this year. I think it's 550.
50 people left?
Yes, 550. That's all there is.
Wow.
There isn't, there isn't a stoplight in town.
Oh, my goodness. Where's your nearest Walmart? How far is it to a Walmart?
35 miles.
35 miles. Wow. 70-mile round trip. That's a good distance.
Yeah, so we don't go to Walmart very often.
I bet. You plan those trips out pretty good, I get. I bet.
Well, when we go to town, we go to town for several things, not just one, I'll tell you. We don't shop every day. We shop maybe once or twice a month, and that's it. And because we grow most of our own food, we very, very seldom buy a whole lot of groceries. It's just a couple things.
Now, I have a question for you on that subject. What happens, say it got hot, really hot out there, and you just and fried all your garden. What's your backup plan if you're, you know, you say you're living off the garden? What happens if the garden doesn't work? Do you just drive to town and buy food, or do you go to your pantry?
First of all, even if it fried, we've still got hot-loving crops that just love the heat, and we've got a huge spring-fed catchment basin down the hill from us, and we pump water from that into the garden. So as long as we can get water on the garden, we're good to go. But let's say worst-case scenario, we're more apt to freeze than anything else, and that's happened. The 27th of June, we froze out. And,
wow.
You know, no, we don't go shopping. I've got about 2 years' worth of food down in the pantry, and that's if you eat well. You can stretch it longer than that or have more people than we do. But that's one reason that we always try to keep a couple years ahead in the pantry, because you never know what the weather or circumstances is going to throw at you.
Absolutely. I mean, that's been our concern. You know, for instance, we went out of town on a family vacation, and so that thought crossed my mind because we were gone for 2 weeks, and I thought, man, what happens if we come back and this garden is just dead? I guess we're going to have to go to a farmer's market, or are we going to end up eating our canned stuff for the next over the winter, or what? So, you know, I've always thought about that, and I, you know, it makes me nervous when we're growing our garden. Always, to, you know, my wife says I plant way too much because I'm always, well, what if this one dies? Other one,
way too much is better than way not enough.
That is so true. That is so true. But yeah, you know, the cool thing is we had our stuff on an automated sprinkler drip system, and you know, we went off on vacation for 2 weeks. We came back and it was, you know, way big and grown up, and it was awesome. So that was kind of cool. But one of my questions was for you is what happens when you do go out of town? Do you have a way to do that, or are you kind of married to the place?
We don't go very often because why would we want to? We live in the very best place in the world, and we really love it here. So we don't go very often. If it's a day trip, we just do our chores early and late. If it's a couple day trip, like when we went down to the MREA fair, both Will and I went. And my son David takes care of the chores then. And if he can't, we've got some of our friends that'll come over, and we swap chores when they have to go away.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, another question I have for you. We did raised bed gardening this year. And we put our soil into the boxes. Now that soil was, or the compost, it was supposed to be compost, but it ended up being more like sand. It was not a very good compost. It looked really good when it was wet, but when it dried out, you could definitely tell there was a large amount of sand in it. And so we mixed peat moss in there, and we tried to grind other things in there. What would you suggest? Because our plants, even though they're growing, I feel like they're not growing at the rate they should be, because the soil doesn't have enough nutrients in it.
Yeah. I've had real good luck with using fish emulsion fertilizer and kelp meal. Yeah. You can buy it at, you know, even some of the big box stores are carrying it now, but a lot of the greenhouses and nurseries carry it. It's a powder or a concentrated liquid you mix with water, and then you spray or water with that, and it you know, you water the foliage, and it really, really helps.
Okay, great. Yeah, I was a little disappointed. Well, obviously, we will not recommend that company that brought that stuff, but, you know, We went down there and got it all, and we found out that it was a hit and miss. You know, our neighbors got it from there, and it was awesome stuff, and they did really well last year, and then so we went down there this year to get some, and it was not awesome stuff. So we've been trying to mix all kinds of stuff in there and trying to figure out ways to retain the moisture. We put because it's been so hot here, we put straw across the top of it so that helps keep the moisture in with a bunch of peat moss in there trying
good
to...
Good thinking. You know what you can do to help that out? This fall, after you've harvested your crops, you know, pull all the vines and stuff out of the beds and dig in some rotted manure and let it just kind of cook in those beds over winter. You know, not a whole lot, but some. And it'll improve it tremendously.
Yeah, shameful part of that is, you know, you put so much work into, you know, setting this up, you know, building the garden beds, and ours are, like, you know, 2.5 feet tall, and so you put all that dirt in there and you do all this stuff and then turn around and it's bad. It's not. It's no better than if I'd have just put it on the ground.
Well, I'll tell you, anything like that is a learning process. And a lot of times when you first start it, it just doesn't work like in the books. And you just have to keep at it. And after a year or two, all of a sudden, it'll be awesome, I promise.
Well, I'm going to hold you to that.
Just don't give up on it. Don't give up. Never give up.
No, we've done really well. We've got raspberries and strawberries, and then last year I planted all of our fruit trees. We've got, you know, I got them when they were probably, I don't know, four or 5 foot tall, and planted all of the fruit trees. And so we have just about every fruit you can think of out there. And it was really cool to go out there this year. And actually, we went on our family vacation. When we came back, you know, there's little pears and apples everywhere, and it was awesome to see that. I really enjoyed coming home to see that.
Great. It's like your own little kids, all those little pears and apples and stuff. It's really great after you haven't had them.
Yes, I know. It's so cool. Do you guys have fruit trees up there?
Yeah, we've got about 30 different varieties of apples, and we also have pears and plums and pie cherries and bush cherries.
Wow. What do you do with 30 varieties of apples?
That does sound like a lot, but we're like rabid fruit explorers. And right now they're baby trees, and we're just getting a few apples. But in the future, of course, there'll be bushels, and you go, oh, my God, what do you do with all of those? Well, some are summer apples that you just eat when they're fresh. We have pigs, we have chickens, we have goats, we have cattle. And we don't have flat, nice, tillable ground that we can grow grain crops. So all of those extra fruits are grain. So the summer apples that I don't use for sauce, cooking, and eating go to the animals, and it's sort of like a huge circle because we feed the animals all those extra, you know, and besides feeding the animals, let me back up a notch here. In the north, nobody grows orchards. So we've got our little orchard. We've got a local farmer's market. The very best fruit we can sell at the farmer's market and buy things we can't raise. The things, the apples, the pears, whatever, that are not nice, that I am not going to use, we feed to the animals. That cuts our grain costs down and lets us be more self-reliant. Okay, by buying things from the fruit, that also cuts our costs down and lets us be more self-reliant. We fed all of those not-so-hot fruits to the animals, and then they make manure, and then we put it in a huge compost pile and feed the trees with it, so it goes around and around, and we just absolutely love that.
Nice, nice. No, that's great. I didn't even think about that, feeding it to the animals. So, yeah, with 30 different varieties of trees, you're going to have, you should have plenty.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And it's also a good barter thing. If times get tough, people are always dying for something different. You know, I've been broke, I've been poor, and, you know, did the beans and rice thing and macaroni and got so sick of it I couldn't stand it for a while. But you need a variety when times are tough. And, like, during the Depression, what did people sell on the street corners? They sold apples. Think about it.
Yep. Yeah, they sure did. That's right. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. One of the things that a lot of people have been talking about is, you know, this is the worst economy since the Great Depression. And in my opinion, and this is probably just Colorado Ron speaking, but I almost think that's almost an insult to the Great Depression to keep comparing this depression to that depression, because these guys don't have a clue. I mean, everybody still has their cell phones, they got their cars driving around, we all have air condition or all the modern comforts. You know, this is not a depression. This is not even close to comparing it to the Great Depression, in my opinion. What do you say about that?
Amen. Yeah, my parents went through the Depression, of course, and my grandparents, and, you know, we're teetering on the brink. The trouble is now, we're living in an artificial society. Everybody's thinking everything's wonderful, got all the toys, it's great, we can charge this on our credit card and fly to Maui and this and that, but the thing is, when it goes out, people have lost all survival skills. They don't know how to grow a garden. They don't know how to do without. They don't know how to can food. You know, they don't know how to work. And that's what really, really scares me, is it's such an artificial lifestyle most people are living today, that if the bottom fell out like it did in the Depression, you know, there wasn't a huge warning. People didn't say, well, everybody get prepared because in 3 months or 6 months there's going to be a terrible time coming and no food and this and that. You know, it comes without a warning. And if it happened tomorrow, how many people would be just petrified and immobilized? And their brains would freeze, and they would have no clue how to make it better, and that scares the heck out of me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and, you know, this is not even close to that. But overnight, like you said, overnight, that can switch, and we can be very close to comparing ourselves to the Great Depression. But right now, you know, as we speak, I still see a line at Starbucks when I drive by. I still see.
Yes. And people wall to wall in all of the cell phone companies, and, you know, they've got to have the latest eye this and eye that. And, I mean, okay, it's nice. Technology's great. But the people from the Depression era knew basic life skills. My grandmother was a widow lady with two sons, and she made out fine, but she had a huge garden, you know, and they knew how to do without, you know, and make a happy life. Today, if people had to do without even a few of the conveniences, they'd be just horrified and, you know, like I say, immobilized, can't think what to do. Nobody's going to take care of me anymore. What do I do? You know, and it's going to be horrible.
Right, right. And, you know, and that's going to be a tough time. And it's always been a concern of mine, because, you know, the one thing that, you know, we have no debt. Our family has no debt except our home. And so that's always been my concern, is that doggone debt on the home, and not being able to cover that if a depression hits.
You won't be alone. I think about 90% of Americans, maybe more than that, don't own their own home. And a lot of them aren't even paying on a home. They're living in an apartment, a townhouse, a condo, whatever, you know. And, right. You know, it's a real concern. It's one thing to lose your car, but, boy, it's scary to think about losing your home. But, you know, the one thing, during the Depression, some people did lose their homes due to debt. But a lot of them, you know, the banks were in such bad trouble, they couldn't do much about it either. Who would buy it, you know? So it's like, you know, we live debt-free as much as we can. Our home and our 80 acres is completely paid for. We just recently bought the adjoining 40 acres, so we had more pasture and, you know, more animal feed, basically, and more privacy. So that we had to borrow on, but we've owned it just a little over a year, and it's already half paid for. We just hunker down and put every penny we can into that land so that it's ours.
Nice. And, you know, and I agree. You know, we're paying our home off as fast as we can. Here in Colorado, homes are a little bit more expensive than most places. And so it's taking us a little bit longer, but, you know, we're trying to pay that sucker off as fast as we can. You know, the enticing part, you know, the enticing thing is when we got the home, it was it 3.5% interest for fixed for 30 years. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Once I've ever
That helps a lot. And, you know, making small extra payments on the principal really helps. That's what we do, you know, is we pay several payments ahead, and then we pay something on the principal in addition. You know, and sometimes it's not a lot, but, boy, it's amazing how fast that cuts down how many years you end up having to pay. And that can be a huge thing, you know.
Exactly. And for those that are listening that don't know, there's several mortgage calculators out there where you can play with that online. So go and do a Google search on that and play with that and say, hey, if I want to make an extra $500 a month payment, or I want to make an extra $100 a month payment, and see how fast that shrinks from a 30-year note to a 15-year note or a 12-year note. It's amazing. So we're hoping to have ours paid off in the next 8 years. I don't think we're going to have time, but I'm hoping.
never know. You do the best you can with what you got. You can't do it all. It's like I don't have kitchen cabinets in my kitchen, and, you know, when I can scrounge up a little bit of money, I buy one kitchen cabinet. So I've got five of them, I think, so far. So, you know, and it'll probably take me another 2 years to get the rest of them, but that's the way it is. You know, you do with what you got.
That's right. Absolutely. You know, and that's another note I'd like to touch on is you stand there and say that, and you don't have any problem saying that. The issue that I see with a lot of people now is they got to have the best and look the best, even though they're in hock up to their eyeballs to do it. You know, here's a prime example.
Yeah.
I have a friend that lives in an apartment complex, and he wants to live there because it makes him feel like he's got a lot of money, even though he's broke and can barely cover the rent payment on that place. But they got a hot tub and a jacuzzi, and they got a little Starbucks down in a lobby, and it's kind of a really fancy apartment complex, but every dime he makes is going to paying that rent just so that he can uphold that image. And I see a lot of people doing that, and I hate to see people do that.
I agree with you 110%. People like that, it's a pride thing. It's gloating and showing how much they have. And you know, the old saying, pride goeth before fall, is so true. You know, we've got a 1990 Ford Festiva. We call it our soup can. And, you know, it gets 42 miles to the gallon. It doesn't have air conditioning. It's noisy as heck because there's no air, you know, there's no insulation in it. The windows you crank up and down. It doesn't park itself. But it was cheap. We bought it for cash. We drive it, put money into it, and drive it. And we'll drive it till it falls apart. You know, we could probably, I went to the bank recently. Our other car died. We had an old Ford Taurus, and it finally died. So we ended up with an old Subaru. And I went to the bank, and I said, you know, we need a car. We decided on a Subaru Outback, you know, so it's little, cheap on gas, four-wheel drive. And, you know, I said, we're looking at about, you know, something under $5,000. And the banker says, well, you can get a better car than that. Your credit's good enough. I said, not on your life. We're not paying that much for a car. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah, we could afford it, okay, but we're not going to afford it.
Right. That's right. You know, and that's just it. I mean, people go, you know, say they go to the dealership and say, I can afford $400 a month payments. What can I get? You know, what's the coolest, nicest car I can get? You know, and it's backwards thinking. Oh, it drives me nuts. So you gotta. I always look at it the other way because it's a depreciating asset. So I look at it as what's the cheapest I could pay.
Exactly, and still have something that'll drive you down the road.
That's exactly my philosophy on that as well. So,
status symbols are not fancy cars, fancy homes, the best clothes. It's a full pantry. It's life skills. It's being happy with what you've got.
I agree totally. You know, and several times my wife and I have looked at each other and thought, you know. We've looked at each other and thought, you know, we should just sell this place and go and build from scratch. And she read your book, the one where you guys went out and built from scratch. And I'm sorry, what was the title of that one?
That was Starting Over.
Yes. And I read it first, and then my wife read it, and we kind of look at each other and keep thinking, man, we want to do it, but man, it seems tough. Man, that seems tough. And it's really hard to break away from the air condition and the comforts that we have. And, you know, we have a nice brick home, and it's just like, oh, do we really want to go out there and do that and break loose like that? Or do I want to work hard, just pay this thing off, and so we're going back and forth between that. So that's been a tough one for us.
Well, it's better to think about it and plan than just jump in and go, oh my God, what were we thinking? And I've been to that point a couple times where it was like, oh my God, what was I thinking? You know, when we sold our place, we had a nice cabin in Montana. And we sold our place, and the sale of the property didn't go through. The guy was trying to do some alternative financing. And we finally got cut loose the 12th of February. Now, this place is a mile, that we have now is a mile and a half off of a road. And so the 12th of February, there was 4 feet of snow on the ground here. It was 20 below, and we hauled in here to the end of the driveway with a U-Haul truck and went, oh, my God, because the guy that we bought the property from was going to plow our driveway for us. And he had a big pickup truck with a snowplow on it, and he, in an hour, had plowed 100 feet. So that was the, oh, my God, what was I thinking moment, you know. But, you know, God was with us, and a bulldozer operator just happened to be going by with his dozer on the trailer, and he said, would you like us to plow your driveway for you? And he says, $250, I'll plow you in. I said, it's a long driveway. He says, that's okay. I don't think he realized it was a mile point three. Anyway, everybody gets the oh my God moments, but you know, it's a good thing to plan ahead of time as much as you can and really be realistic about what you want to do and what you don't want to do.
Well, yeah. And that's the key point right there, is be realistic. Do as much as you want to do, but not, you know, we travel a lot. Obviously, you know, we go to the expos. I take the whole family to that. We like to travel. We like to go and make a trip out of it. So when we go to the next Self Reliance Expo in Arlington, you know, we'll make a big trip out of that, and it'll be 2 weeks for us. You know, we'll spend a week going down, seeing some sites, and then we'll take a different route on the way back. And we love to teach the kids history and things like that. So we'll stop at old forts and different things, and show the kids things on the way back. That's a lot harder to do when you've got animals to take care of, and chickens to feed, and gardens to water, and so there's a certain amount you got to figure out the balance for your family, and I've noticed that that's different for everybody.
Well, yeah, it is. Everybody has different lifestyles and different ways they make a living. I mean, what you're doing requires that travel. What I'm doing doesn't. I'm a writer, and I can do it anywhere. So, you know, that's really helpful for us to do what we do, and because I can do it in a hotel room. I can write, you know, on a bus. I can write, you know, as long as there's Wi-Fi. And in my office, you know, we're off grid. We've got a satellite, so it doesn't matter where I am. But you know, it's a good idea to be realistic. And you know, sometimes what you're doing right now, you might not be doing in 10 years or 15 years, you know. So,
right.
You know, there's always the long-term picture. Maybe after your place is paid off, maybe you'd want to buy another chunk of land somewhere and, you know, just slowly build or whatever. You know, you don't need to totally abandon one for the other. So,
well,
planning.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, like I said, there's so many scenarios and there's so many different situations from everybody. It's hard to say I'm going to do it just like that person, because their scenario or their situation could be completely different than mine. And so it's funny how that works. Anyway, one of the questions that we had was, obviously, you have a column there. I believe it's called Ask Jackie Clay. Is that right? Ask Jackie.
Ask Jackie. Yep.
Okay, so has there been any questions on there that really have stumped you?
Maybe not stumped, but I'll tell you the weirdest one I ever had. Somebody wrote in, and they wanted to make rose hip jelly, and the lady wanted to know how to get the fuzz off of the rose hip seeds. I felt like telling her, take a little disposable razor and shave each one. But, no, I didn't do that. So I just told her, cook them up and run them through a jelly bag. You don't need to worry about the fuzz on the seeds. You're not going to eat it.
How do you get the fuzz off the seeds? Wow. Oh, my goodness. That's a tough
one. Like that's an all-time favorite, you know.
But there's never been one that stumped you, huh?
Yes, there has. Actually, Will just reminded me. A person from, where was she from? Anyway,
Canada.
Well, she was from Canada, and she had always made these pickles that were like a family heirloom, and it required acacia buds, and she wanted to know where to get acacia buds. And I went, oh, my God, I've never even heard of acacia buds. So I had to do a lot of research, and I found out that they're the flowering bud of the tree that you get cinnamon bark from. So they're a dehydrated flower bud. So anybody that wants to know what acacia buds are, that's what they are, and you can buy them. You have to check online for acacia buds, and there's a couple spice shops that carry them.
Wow. Never even heard of that one.
Neither did I.
Well, hey, Jackie, we're getting ready to go into a break here. You got time to hold through the break?
Sure, I do.
Awesome, awesome. Well, let's. I tell you what, we're at the top of the hour here. Let's take a quick break and give some time up for our sponsors, and then we'll get right back to it.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specification in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hello. Welcome back. I'm Colorado Ron. Welcome back to Homestead Basics. I'm sorry, Homestead Basics. Backwoods Home Self-Reliance Exposed. I wrote down Homestead Basics for something else. I'm your host, Colorado Ron, and I'm here with Jackie Clay. Jackie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thanks. Thanks for coming back and sticking with us throughout the break there. One of the things I wanted to cover was Homestead Basics. I wanted to talk with you about a couple of things. One of the things I'd like to talk about, first of all, is, you know, you have a lot of recipes, and as I'm going through Backwoods Home Magazine, I see a lot of your recipes in there, and different articles that you've written, and I'm very curious, what is like one of your, I know it's hard to just pick one, but you know, what's the first one that comes to mind as one of your favorite recipes?
My very favorite recipe is halftime spoon rolls, and it's one that my grandmother used to make, and my mother, of course. And it's a roll that is totally impossible to screw up. You don't have to knead it, and it's done in about half an hour. So if you decide you want to make fresh rolls or hot dog buns or hamburger rolls, you can whip them up, and within an hour you're eating hot, fluffy rolls. And it's so versatile and so easy, and we eat them all the time. So, yes, that is like my very favorite.
Nice. Nice.
And that's on page 107 of the Pantry Cookbook.
Yeah, that one as well. That is an awesome book, by the way. I there is so much information in these books. Now, you brought some of these to the expo last time, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, I brought Jackie Clay's Pantry Cookbook, and then the one before it is Growing and Canning Your Own Food. And that tells you how to grow your food and to can it. And, you know, it's the most complete canning book out there. There's actually many, many more recipes for canning food in there than any other canning book out there. And then the Pantry Cookbook kind of takes up after that, telling you how to use food from your garden, food that you have home canned, and food from your long-term storage pantry. So that's the companion books together.
Nice. Yeah, and I believe Backwoods Home sent me the whole collection. I've read just about every one of them. And one of the things that that I love is the recipes that you have in there. You know, first of all, are not complicated. They are common ingredients. It's not something that you're looking for. What's that ingredient you just mentioned?
Acacia buds. No, I promise there's nothing in there that's weird, and they're all tasty. I've tried them all.
That's the best part of writing a cookbook, I bet, is just having to taste all these great recipes.
Well, I've had you know, most of those are old family recipes, and I've got these old handwritten, my great grandmother's handwritten recipes, you know, the yellowed paper with the really beautiful handwriting, and it's kind of crumbly and falling apart. And then I've got boxes and boxes of my mother's recipes and my recipes, and so I had to sit out and sort them all out and decide what was going in and what wasn't.
That would be tough. The how do I want to word this? What are some of the quickest, easiest recipes that you like the most?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many. There's nothing that I make all the time. Tamale pie is one of my favorites because it's very filling, and I can use my home canned hamburger. So if I'm in a hurry, I can slam that baby together in about 10 minutes in the oven, and in a half an hour we're eating it. And basically it's like hamburger, tomato sauce, peppers, corn, and then it's topped with cornbread. So you've got your bread, you've got your casserole basically underneath, and it's really good.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Throw a little cheese on it, add a little salsa and sour cream, and you're in business.
That is awesome. Now let's go back to some of the homestead basics things. Some of the basics obviously are, how do you calculate the size of your garden versus the size of your family? Is there a way to do that? I have six kids. How in the heck do I know, as a first-time gardener, what size garden I'm going to need?
It's tough. The bigger the better. That's one thing. The bigger the better, you know. And But at the same time, when it's a new garden, or if you're new to gardening, you need to start out smaller and work your way up. I had 8 kids at home. I had 2 homemade and the rest adopted and stepkids. And we had a garden that was 100 feet by 100 feet, and that kept us fed plus filled the pantry. But you can't just move to a new homestead, plow up some grass, and decide that you're going to raise all of your food, because that is not going to work. You're going to end up with all the weeds and grass in the country. You don't know what you're doing, and it overwhelms you, and then you quit. So, you know, start out smaller, get used to that, go bigger, and you'll see how much your garden produces for you. And by that, you're going to say, well, gee, I really need a whole lot more beans, or I need a whole lot more corn, or a lot more potatoes. So next year, you know, raise twice as much until it gets to be a nice balance for you. So, you know, there is no, you know, I've read all of these, you know, you need 100 feet of beans and you need 400 feet of corn and this, you know, bullcrappy. It depends. I've seen people with little tiny gardens that were so productive it was unbelievable. And I've seen people with 2 acres of garden that they could barely get enough to eat off of all summer because it was full of weeds. So, you know, the care of your garden, the quality of your soil, what varieties of crops you plant, you know.
Nice.
A lot of things, you know, you just have to, it's a personal thing. Some people don't like beans. Some people don't like corn. Some people don't like this or that. There's only 3 of us, and I grow 75 tomato plants. But you'd be surprised at how many tomato products I can. If you take a look at the canning book, you know, there's dozens of recipes in there for tomatoes. And we don't like to just have tomato sauce and canned tomatoes. I make all kinds of sauces, barbecue sauce, different flavors of salsa, 5 different kinds of spaghetti sauce. You know, there's pizza sauce with ground sweet red peppers. You know, all these different things are all tomato products. So I grow lots of tomatoes. You know, somebody else, maybe they don't like tomato products, so they would want to grow more corn or beans. So it's a real personal thing.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's what we're figuring out now, is just trying to figure out what do we like the most. You know, what do we want to, you know, my wife said, you know, I would like to get, you know, two years worth of salsa, because we eat a lot of salsa. So mm-hmm. We planted tomato plants and all that stuff. And this is the first year we actually planted from heirloom seeds. You know, I don't know if you saw this Self-Reliance Expo, but there was a couple of companies that were selling heirloom seed packets, you know, and seed kits and things like that. And so a lot of people buy those for an emergency and put them away. And I thought, well, heck with that. I want to know if these things work. I want to do it now. And so that's what we planted in our garden. And it was really cool to actually plant from seed and not just from a bunch of plants, you know, a bunch of starters.
Well, it's great. And I'd like to, you know, the people really scare me when they buy a can of survival seeds and they say, well, if times get tough, I'll grow a garden and we can eat out of it and we'll be fine. Gardening is a skill. You don't just start with a piece of lawn, plow it up, and grow all your own food. That is not going to work. You've got to learn to do it well, because in a survival situation, or if just times get tough, you're going to need that food. And, you know, when you're starving, you don't want to go, oh, I screwed up, I killed all my beans, you know. Oh, the grass took the garden away. I've got to eat out of it, and now it's gone. You know, you need to learn before, you know, the problems hit, you know.
Oh, totally. 100% I agree. And, you know, and that's why we've been gardening for, we've been doing it for, you know, 3 or 4 years. But, you know, even now, like I said, we ran into a problem with our soil when we replanted this year's garden. So you just never know. And tackling those skills, you learn something new every year. Usually you learn several new things every year, at least that's been our experience. Now you probably know everything, so you probably don't learn anything now, do you?
If I don't learn at least one new thing every day, I think I'm a failure. And I think that there's a lot of people that are suddenly realizing how little they know. And I talk to a lot of people at the different shows, and they're getting so interested in raising their own animals, in raising their own food, and learning to can especially. Oh, my gosh, I get so many people with canning questions. And, you know, that's why, you know, the next expo is at in Texas in, the end of July. And I'm going to talk on canning your own food for more self-reliant living. And, you know, why a person should learn to can. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I water bath, but I'm afraid of a pressure can, or they'll blow up. My grandmother's blew up, and I'm afraid of them. And I don't know how many hundreds of people that I've talked into trying it, and they're safe. Modern pressure canners do not blow up in your face. They will not put spaghetti sauce on the ceiling. You know, and then they'll write me or email, oh, I just canned my first batch, and it's so wonderful, and why haven't I done this all my life, you know? You know, it's another one of those skills that people are realizing they don't have, they really would like to learn, and they're just like, everywhere in the country, people are learning how to can, and I think it's just absolutely great.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's so amazing. And if you guys are listening and you have it canned, oh my gosh, you are totally missing out. The best spaghetti sauce in the world is the one coming out of the can that my wife made. You know, everything is just is so much better and it's much more satisfying. My wife last year in our garden we planted cucumbers, because my wife wanted pickles. Well,
yeah.
As usual, I said, well, just what happens if that plant dies? Let's plant another one. What happens if that plant dies? Let's plant two more. And we had so many pickles. My wife's got so many cases of pickles. We are good to go forever.
Well, that's the good thing about canning, though, is once it's in the jar, it is good forever. And you're eating gourmet quality food that has no chemicals, that has not been sprayed with something that makes you glow in the dark, that won't give you cancer. You know, it's great. You know, that's the main topic of our, we're having homestead seminars here at our place for the first year. And we're having one at the August 17th, 18th, and 19th. And the main focus is on learning to can, and we're going to walk people right through water bathing and jelly and jam and meat and the whole shebang.
Hi guys. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to jump in and say hey to Jackie real quick before I had to catch my next plane.
Oh, hi there.
This is Bubba.
Yeah, where are you off to now?
Well, I was supposed to be on my way to... I should have been calling in right now from Singapore, but the Singaporean government decided that they didn't want me in their country, so I'm actually in Phoenix.
Wow, I got kicked out of Canada once, but never Singapore.
Yeah, well, Colorado Ron, and I think the audience knows the story. I brought a slingshot into Singapore last year and got arrested for it. And apparently I didn't clear. When I got back to the States, I was supposed to clear through the embassy/consulate the arrest. And apparently I didn't do it. So when I was flying to Singapore yesterday, I got to get on the plane. They ran my passport through and basically told me, personally, you're not allowed to go into Singapore. So I had to turn me around and send me back.
All those slingshots are deadly dangerous.
I'm telling you. So it's all Colorado Ron's fault because, you know, we had a bunch of kids out there at one of our shows that were selling slingshots made out of deer antler. And if I hadn't gone to that show, which was the first one I went with, I think, right, Colorado?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have bought the slingshot, and I wouldn't have gotten arrested. So I'm blaming it all on Colorado Ron.
Hey, if it works, do it.
Anyway, I just wanted to drop in and say, more flight to Florida, but I didn't want to miss the opportunity to say hey to Jackie. And then I guess Southern Prepper 1, SP1, is going to be on a little bit later, right, Rob?
He's our second guest, so he'll be on here shortly after we get done with Jackie.
Wonderful. Okay, well, I'll let you guys get back to it. I just wanted to pop in, didn't want people to not hear my wonderful voice. Wouldn't be a show without Baba. Just kidding. All right, Colorado, treat him well. Tell SP1 I said hey, and I'll be listening to the show.
All right, sounds good. Take care, buddy.
All right,
bye, guys. Bye-bye. Okay, he did make it. He called in.
Well, good for him. Hey, at least he didn't call from a Singapore jail.
No kidding. Oh, that was so funny. Yeah. No weapons are allowed in Singapore, and he didn't think of the slingshot as a weapon, and so he just had it in his bag, no big deal, And he got there, and they asked him, "Do you have a catapult in your bag?" And he's like, "What? No, I don't have a catapult in my bag." Yeah, he got arrested for it.
Oh boy. Well, a friend of ours has a son that's a Marine. And he was on active duty. He was on a flight, and he was required to go armed with a rifle. And he got on the plane with a loaded rifle, but they confiscated his fingernail clippers.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I thought that was a little strange.
Yeah, that's crazy. Oh, man, that's a whole other story. I'm sure... I don't know about you, but I just hate flying. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. If I can drive, I will. But obviously it makes sense to fly sometimes. But man, I just feel like I'm so used, and I feel like a piece of cattle, a piece of meat when I go through there. I mean, they run me through the scanners. They do all this stuff, and everything has to be under 3 ounces. Oh, but I can bring six of them as long as it's all under 3 ounces. But I can't, I can't bring one of them that's 10 ounces. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But anyway, so let's get back to it. What were we talking about? Oh, canning, yes. So, we had a ton of pickles, and we still have a ton of pickles, and they're good, and we love them. And that is what it's all about as far as canning and getting that stuff done. And so I'm excited to hear that you're concentrating on canning. Well, one of the questions a lot of people always have is, what about meats, canning meats? And that always seems to be a big thing for everybody's.
It is so easy. It is unbelievable. I just got through canning a batch of hamburger. We butchered a steer, and I had a lot of meat I needed to can up. And I just did my last batch of hamburger here day before yesterday. And I just lightly brown it up, pack it in the jars, and, in less than an hour, I've got all these jars of canned hamburger. And if I come home and I'm tired, I just pop a jar lid and throw it in the frying pan and stir it up, and... I may add it to some extra from some chili, or I may make tacos out of it, or I may make tamale pie. Who knows?
Nice. Well, I mean, it is a lot easier. One of the things that I've learned going through this whole process myself is that it is a lot easier than you think it is. Everybody seems to build things up.
Definitely. It is so easy, and it's, yes, it requires, like I said, it took me an hour, but I ended up with like a dozen pints of canned hamburger. And basically it's just like, your ground stir-fried hamburger, and you can use it in all kinds of stuff. So it took me an hour to make it, yes, but I got 12 meals out of it. And, me, that's significant,
Absolutely. I mean, is there any meats that you don't can that you avoid? No,
there are. It's a little difficult to can, like processed meat like hot dogs or summer sausage and have them turn out like you'd like them to. Hot dogs kind of swell up, but then on the other hand, you can slice hot dogs up and make your own beanie weenies if you want to. So,
yep.
You know, I can slice pepperoni. I can whole pepperoni. You know, there's just tons of stuff you can. And we just love the variety. You know, I can nut meats. When they're on sale, I buy nut meats and I can them. And once they're canned, they do not get rancid. They're good for years and years.
I'm shocked about the sliced pepperoni thing. You can slice pepperoni? I never even thought of that one.
You betcha. And, you know, I come home and I want to make a pizza. I don't have to worry about running to the store for some pepperoni. And I don't need to worry, is that pepperoni in the refrigerator turning blue in the back or what? You know, run down the pantry, get a half pint of sliced pepperoni, pull it out, throw it on a pizza, you're good to go.
Wow. Good idea. I never thought of that one. Interesting.
Yeah. See, there's just dozens and dozens of things a person can. And once you start, you get, like, addicted, and you get so excited. It's so fun.
You start canning everything in sight.
Yeah, just about.
Let's try it. You've been pretty much doing this your whole life. Is that right?
Yes, it is, actually. You know, luckily, my grandmother was still alive, and my mother canned. Like I said, these Depression era ladies knew how to can, and they knew how important it was, and they knew how to cook with it, too. So, you know, I learned a lot just standing and watching people do things. And then pretty soon, I helped snap beans, and I helped peel peaches. And, you know, as you got older, you did more things, so... It was always fun to me. I always loved it.
Well, that's great. You know, that's just awesome. Now, how can people find you online?
Well, they can go to the Backwoods Home Magazine website, and if they scroll down, I do a blog twice a week and answer questions every day. So there'll be answered questions, and then the little blog, I usually have photographs from what we're doing here at the homestead, projects we're working on, things that are happening, and I tell about what we're doing. So there's that. And if they want more information on our homestead seminars, they can just email me. It's just jackie@backwoodshome.com, and I'll send them a flyer on a seminar. And, you know, I try to get to some of the expos and some of the shows. We just got back from the MREA fair in Custer, Wisconsin, and we'll be going down to Texas for the Preparedness Expo. So they can sure stop at the booth. I'll be speaking in Texas, and, you know, if they want to come hear what I've got to say, great, and stop by the booth and visit. I love talking to people.
Yeah, so you'll be at the Backwoods Home booth again at the Self-Reliance Expo, July 27th, 28th in Arlington, right?
No. Oh yeah, oh. I keep thinking Dallas. I will.
Yeah. So,
and
on a side note, just between.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, people are more than welcome to stop by and visit. You know, I'm not unapproachable.
Absolutely. I mean, this is like seeing your long lost mother. I swear, I walked up, gave her a big hug. She's just wonderful, and we had a great time. Sitting down and talking, and it was just like, you know, it's funny. Every time we go to these Self-Reliance Expos, it's kind of like a big family reunion. You know, and so. That's so funny. Oh, and actually, we have somebody that's called in and has a question for you. So hold tight here. Let's see what the question is here. We have a caller coming in. Let's see. Is it Vicki Lynn?
Yes, it is.
How are you doing, Vicki?
I'm doing great. I'm enjoying the show, and I love listening to Jackie. But I have a quick question about canning. Jackie, you mentioned that you brown your meat first. And when we were in West Virginia, we were hunting venison, and we were told to raw pack our ground meat. Do you ever raw pack your ground meat, or do you always brown it first?
I always brown it first, and I'll tell you two reasons that I do that. First of all, when you brown your meat, it cooks it in crumbles, so when you want to use that meat, you can just fork it out into your frying pan, and it is just like fresh hamburger. If you raw pack it, it kind of sinks down and shrinks, and it turns more like meatloaf. So, it, you know, when you take it out and try to, you know, fry it in a pan to break it into crumbles like you would usually use your ground meat, it's real hard to break it into an appetizing looking. It looks more like dog food. So I always brown the meat. I don't brown it, but I just cook it enough that it turns into crumbles and takes the red out so that the meat doesn't glob together in the bottoms of the jars. Because even like stew meat and steaks and chops and roasts, I always kind of lightly brown it. First of all, it shrinks the meat down so you get more in your jar. And second, it makes a lot more appetizing looking food because it stays in a presentable chunk in the jar. It also tastes a lot better because, you know, when you brown your meat, it almost, you know, the pan dripping taste, it, you know, is real flavorful. But
right.
If you just pack it raw, you don't get that. So that's why I brown the meat.
Okay. I was just trying to eliminate one of the steps and wondered if it was safe or if it was better to go ahead and do the extra step. But it sounds like that it really produces a better product. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is. But I'll tell you, you know, I've had a moose that I shot and had to can it up fast. Now, a moose has about 600 pounds of meat, and I had the canner. I had two canners going 24/7, and sometimes I didn't have time to get that meat browned, and so I raw packed it because I just needed to get it in the jars.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a real big hurry, it's a good idea just to get that meat done. But if you've got a little bit more time, it really, really doesn't take much more time to brown it first, and the results are so much better.
Well, let me just ask you one final question. If I'm raw packing versus browning, are the canning times still the same, 75 for pints and 90 for quarts?
Yes and no. If you raw pack it, what you need to do is put your jars in like a turkey roaster with hot water and put it in the oven and put an oven thermometer in the center of the meat in the center jar. And you want that meat to be 170 to 180 degrees. And then take those, it's called exhausting the jars, and don't ask me why. Basically, you're bringing that cold meat up to a hot temperature. Then go ahead and put your lids on and then process them at 75 and 90 minutes. But you need to bring that cold meat up to temperature because if you've got a canner full of cold meat in there that's sealed, you know, with the lids on, it takes forever for that canner to get up to a warm enough temperature to even exhaust steam. And you're never sure if those center jars are actually warm enough in the middle of the meat. So you want to make sure that meat is hot, so you don't end up under-processing it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Jackie, and thank you, Ron, for having me on.
Yeah, Vicki Lynn, any time. Well, there you go. Now we learned a lot more.
We'll have to have an Ask Jackie radio show. But then somebody would ask about Keisha buds, and I'd go, ah.
I think we should. That would be an awesome radio show. Oh, man. I know I can call in and ask a whole bunch of questions. So we'll see you at the Self-Reliance Expo, July 27th, 28th, and you'll be at the Backwoods Home Magazine's booth. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, and I'd love to see anybody.
You're going to be bringing some of your books there as well, correct?
Yeah, I will. And I'll even bring a few flyers on our homestead seminars, too.
That's great. That's great. Awesome. Well, Jackie, I really appreciate your time, and thanks for coming on, and really appreciate you taking time away from your busy schedule to be on with us.
Oh, it's always fun to come on, Ron.
Thanks so much, Jackie. You take care. We'll see you.
You too.
We'll see you
Yeah, and I hope that they don't run me through security too stringently.
Man, trust me, I know. I know all about that. Good grief.
All right. You know, well, I look like a terrorist, you know.
Oh, I know. It's like, really? Well, I guess I could, but you, yeah, with the police. But me, I guess I could look a little threatening. But anyway, all right. Well, we'll see you at the end of the month, Jackie. Thanks for coming on.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see you, Ron. Bye.
Okay, so we're going to break here real quick, and then when we come back on, we'll have David Kobler or Southern Prepper One. Thanks for coming. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. Don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine's Atlantic. I'm your host, Colorado Ron, and Bubba is out and traveling this morning. He was supposed to be in Singapore calling in, but unfortunately, as usual for us, he got kicked out of Singapore, wasn't allowed in, actually, and so he is traveling back home this morning. So our next guest will be David Kobler, or better known as Southern Prepper One. David, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, what's going on? How are you doing?
Here. I am doing great. Yep. If you guys could just see me now, I'm wearing a hairnet and an apron. And I'm doing some canning, but I took a short break to talk to you. If you could just see me now, I look a little funny.
Where are you at?
I went down to the cannery in Atlanta, the Mormon cannery. Got an appointment down there to put back some more long-term food. So just doing that this morning with some friends.
Very nice. Very nice. What are you guys canning?
We're canning three kinds of beans, some rice, some wheat, apple slices, some dehydrated carrots, just a lot of stuff. Just putting back a little bit more long-term storage, 30-year shelf life. So,
Yes. Isn't those wonderful? They are the nicest canneries around, hands down.
Oh, yes. Yes, they're nice, clean, friendly. You can't beat it.
Yep. And the prices are very, very reasonable.
Yes, very, very affordable. You know, this allows you to put back for your family, plus put back for others. You know, so you can help your neighbor. You don't have to shoot at your neighbor. You don't have to say, no, I don't have any food. You can supply him with some. You know, a few extra $100 will really go a long ways with oatmeal and rice and beans. So that's what we're doing today, just doing some canning.
You know what? I love going down to the LDS cannery because you get – Not only do you can for yourself, but a lot of times you can for emergencies such as like these fires or floods, you know, or hurricanes that came into Louisiana, for instance. You pack some, you know, you spend an hour or two packing for others, and then you spend an hour or two packing for yourself, and that's just what I love doing. So, So I have a question for you, actually. It's a question from an email that I've got, and one of the first question we actually had for you was, when is your show? So I don't know if you know that yet or not, or if we're still in the works on that. But they said, I heard Prepper One's going to have a radio show. When is it? I want to listen.
It will be very soon. Hopefully next week we will. We're going to finalize hopefully everything today. And then hopefully next week we will have it on the air. Looking forward to it. It's just a little different form than YouTube, and just a little different form to get information out and share things with people.
Good. And I assume you'll share that on your YouTube channel. We'll share it on our Facebook page so that if you're listening and you were hoping to get that answer today, sorry about that, but we will post it on our Facebook page the first second we know it, and post a link to the his first show, so that way you guys have it. So there you go. All right. Do you know the name of the show?
We're going to call it Practical Preppers, and we're going to deal with just things that are practical, all areas of prepping. Definitely with security, with infrastructure, with, you know, is solar worth it? Should I think about a backup generator? And how to implement all this stuff into a plan. And not to have it like we're worried about doomsday. You're worried about things that go on in your life. Right now we have the wildfires out west. It could be you getting laid off. So just preparing an insurance policy for your family. And that's what we're going to be talking about.
Nice. Now, obviously you mentioned fires. Colorado is on fire. I mean,
yes.
It's just everywhere I look, there's a fire going on, and you know, neighborhoods are burning down right and left. In a situation like that, how should somebody be prepared? I mean, a water hose ain't going to do it. So obviously, there's going to be homes that are going to have to be evacuated, and people are losing their homes, and they're burning down to the ground. So in a situation like that where you know you have to evac, what's your contingency plan?
The most important thing on any fire is if you can protect your property, protect it, but do not jeopardize lives. We can rebuild a house. You can get a new car, but we cannot replace loved ones or friends. So, you know, be smart. If you can fight it with some surety that you are not going to risk your life, then do it. If not, you need to bug out, and you need to have a plan. That can be a simple plan as, you know, a relative 100 miles away saying, hey, if in an emergency, I'm going to come to your house. But before you come, you need to have some other things done. You need to have all your important documents in one area so you can grab it. You know, deeds, titles, marriage licenses, all that stuff that's really hard to replace. And that's part of your bug out kit. You need to have that ready. Pictures. With the electronic age, have your pictures on flash drives or some way where you can take them and always can, you know, just have them reprinted or review them on your computer. And you also need a bug out bag. You might, you know, flee your house, but you might need a day or two while you're in transit to, you know, have some food and water. So it's not the end of the world, but it's definitely, you have to plan for it. It's just another thing that we plan for.
Nice. Okay. Now, another question that we've gotten, and I touched on this a little bit at the beginning. I'd like to hear what you have to say about it, is, separation of family. You know, you're at work, your wife's at home. something happens, you come home and the neighborhood's gone. I mean, what is, you know, like for instance, in Colorado Springs, you can, cell service was not, you couldn't make a call. The phone lines were completely jammed. So what, you know, what's your alternative communication, or do you have a plan or a bug out location for family when they're separated?
Definitely. You need to work on that, because if you don't have it now and something happens, you guys will be all going in each different direction trying to find where the other loved one is, and you'll never find them, or you'll endanger yourself. You'll go into an area that you shouldn't be there because you're worried about your son or daughter or your wife. So you need to have a plan. It can be as simple as a central location. It could be a friend's house a few miles from your house. It could be a relative, but you need to have it picked out, and so everyone knows. You can also have a spot at a park. You know, I'm going to go to the park if you can't find me, and if I'm not there, guess what? I'm going to leave you a note. I'm going to mark something that you know I was there. Very simple things, but if you plan it now and you have an emergency, you will not be worried about the situation. You'll know, hey, my kids are going to be at this location, or my kids are going to be at the friend's house. But all this needs to be done in advance. You can never plan it after the fact. You need to have everything planned out now. And this isn't something you need to worry about. It's just common sense.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's just something to plan. And a lot of times the kids enjoy it. They have fun doing it. You know, you go to the park, like you said, and show them, this is the place. Here's where we'll meet. You know, and then go play kickball or something. But make an activity out of it so the kids remember. And especially your little ones, you know, I've got, 5, 6, and 8-year-olds, you know, and so the, you know, making it memorable, making it something fun, and not scaring them is probably a good idea, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. You know, you shouldn't be scared when you're planning for this, especially if you have young ones. You should make it fun. You should make it, like we're camping, we're going to do something fun, not ever with fear.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the next question I had for you was on Practical Preppers. What are some of the topics that you're going to be covering, and what do you consider practical?
We're going to be covering a lot of things. Setting up a retreat group, as in a group of support. Supportive people that's going to help you. So finding these people, finding that you can get along with them, and just getting to the point where everyone knows what's it going to involve. So there's no, you know, unexpected, oh, I didn't know we had to do that. So everything's sort of spelled out. That's definitely one thing. I get a lot of questions, you know, I'm all by myself. I need to find some people. And one thing we'll be addressing is how to find people, how to find the right people. There's so many people out there looking. I meet them every day, and they're connecting. It's sort of funny, the people I'm with, I actually met through YouTube about a year and a half ago, and we've become great friends. And it's neat, because if I have to go south of my location 100 miles, I can come to their retreat. If they have to go north 100 miles, they can come to my retreat. So we're going to talk about this, how to set these things up. But it's definitely going to be practical. We're going to stress to you have to have a water plan. You know, a lot of people say, well, I got 50 gallons of water stored. That's not a renewable source. So we're going to get you, how can I get a renewable source, be it a lake, a river, a creek, a rain catchment system? But you need to develop these things. And we're going to be stressing these things, just practical approaches. And these will help you out in a worst case, but it will also help you out if you find out that the water line broke going to your house, and for 3 days it might not have water. So you can go and use your water from storage. And you know, yeah, that's going to be bad and it's going to be inconvenient, but it's also, look at that as a practice run, because you're going to learn stuff. You're going to say, man, I don't have enough water, go 3 days. So a lot of practical things we're going to address.
Nice. Now, what would you consider a decent amount of water storage for an average-sized family? Obviously, it'd be nice to have source, but I live in the middle of a neighborhood, so just out of curiosity, what would you consider a decent amount of water storage? I'll give you an example. I have 375 gallons. Is that enough?
That is a great start, and that is, you know, that will get you a long ways if you ration that water, if you use it wisely. Yeah, you're not going to be able to take showers or baths with that, but you can use a little bit for personal hygiene. And really what you're going to look at is you're going to look at the situation. If you know it's just an ice storm and you know within a few days you're going to have power on, then you can use a little bit more water. But if you know it's a catastrophe and it's probably not going to end for a week or 2 weeks or a month, yeah, then you're going to get into your conserve mode and serve as much as you can. But 375 gallons is a great start. If everyone stored water on that amount, it'd be awesome. But some people can't. Some live in a condo. So you're going to have to be creative. You know, water bottles under the bed, water in the closet. We all have hot water heaters, and you definitely have some water stored there. The more water you can store, the better, because water is the first thing you're going to need.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I just proved that point this last week. You know, I did a... I don't think you picked up the first part of the show, but you know, I fasted. I did a long term fast for 9 days, wow, where I didn't eat anything. But obviously, during those 9 days, you have to have water.
Yes.
You can't have food, but you can't go without water.
Definitely. We meet a lot of people that have a year supply of Mountain House, Wise, whatever dehydrated food they like. And then they have 20 gallons of water. I mean, that's not going to work. So, you know, figure out what you want to plan for and then work on that. But have everything equal. You know, some people have a ton of beans and rice, but they have a very limited amount of cooking. They might have a bag of charcoal or one gas grill. You know, realistically, you're not going to cook all that food with
right,
one bag of charcoal. So be realistic. You know, if I'm planning for this amount, have everything you're going to need. I'd rather see someone with 6 months of everything than some guy with 1, 2, 3 years of food and short in a lot of other areas.
Nice. Well, this is going to be a great show. I can't wait to listen in on this one. This is going to be interesting. It's going to help me fill in some of my gaps. You know, it's funny because all my friends think that, man, Colorado Ron has just got it figured out. You know, he's got it all. He's got everything. And I'm thinking, oh, crap, I'm missing it. You know, I got holes here. I got holes there. I got to figure out how to fix this. And
yes.
So,
yes.
And I don't know at what point I'll feel like I'm prepared. But right now I'm at the point, you know, I've been preparing for several years. And I'm at the point now that I still don't feel prepared. And there's always something else that I need to probably do. So,
yes.
I don't know if you ever get to the point where
you never.
You're... Oh, good.
You're never totally right, prepared. You're always working forward to something else. Yes, definitely.
Oh, so I'm not the only one. Okay.
Yes. I have projects to do. I have a whole list of projects to do right now.
So you're coming down to Dallas or Arlington, Texas for the Self-Reliance Expo in July 28th. So what do you plan on covering that episode?
I haven't totally determined that. There's two topics I'm struggling with to talk about. One of them will be maybe how to set up a retreat group, what to look for, how to find the right people.
That's
and if I, don't do, it is a tough one, but it's very important. You know, it's real easy to go out and buy a year supply of food. I mean, that's the easy part, and, you know, buy water containers. But you need a support structure. No one can do it on their own. The guys that go out to the wilderness and say, I'm moving to, you know, just say Montana, and I'm going to survive there. I would rather survive in a community of people that know me, that trust me, than just pick up right now and move to an area that no one knows me. I might not be accepted into the community right away. So getting that community working together, because no one can do it on their own. You need every talent out there. You need a doctor. You need dentists. You need, you know, construction guys. You need all of the different skill sets that will let your family survive. And I personally don't know them all. But guess what? If I can know those people that do know it all, I think we can get through, you know, a disaster together.
And a extended family necessarily isn't the right choice.
You know what? I meet a lot of people that, you know, some families don't get along. Now, I'm hoping in a worst-case situation they put, you know, that trivial stuff behind them that's happened in the past and concentrate on what's more important, you know, keeping themselves alive, helping others. But, you know, the nice thing, my whole extended family pretty much is on board. They're preppers. A few of them came on board years ago and a few just recently. So it has taken a great stress off of me. You know, when everyone, your brothers and your sister's families, your parents are preparing, you don't have to worry as much because right before that, I was putting back extra to take care of them because, you know, that's my family, my responsibility. But now they're doing it themselves. So, you know, now we have extra food. Now we can help the neighbor because if I can help my neighbor, I don't have to worry about him jumping over the fence and stealing my eggs or stealing my chickens. You know, he's taken care of.
No, I agree 100%. No. So does all your family have a you guys, how does this work for you? Do you have a set up retreat somewhere else, or do you live at that retreat and everybody's coming to you, or do you guys, you know, is this a third location that you guys go to on the weekends, or how is that set up?
We actually have multiple retreats. We've built a network up of people in the area because just we've been doing it. So we've gone with three retreats. All three are well equipped because you never know. Like in the case of the fires in Colorado, you might have the best retreat, but a fire forces you out. So I always like to tell people, have a back door, have a place where you can go and partner up with those other people, because guess what? They might have to leave and come to you. So, you know, work out in agreements with people.
Nice. That's a good idea. Man, three retreats, that takes quite a bit to get set up.
It does, but basically, you can partner with people because you can see what they're doing. They're doing exactly what I'm doing. I mean, they're putting in food, they're putting generators in, they're developing their land, they're developing backup water, and I'm doing it. So when you can see a person making that commitment, just like you are, it's easy to link up with them because you know they're on the same page. You know they're doing everything in their powers to take care of their family. So alliances are really easy to form like that. You know, if people aren't pulling their fair share, you don't form alliances with that. But when you know people are doing exactly what you're doing, it's really easy to form agreements with them.
Right. Now, in your opinion, how far is too far? Obviously, you don't form an alliance with somebody in Northern Washington, do you?
We don't. I'll tell you right now that our locations are no more than 20 miles apart, all three of them. But we have friends in North Carolina that have retreats. We will be perfectly welcome there if the situation turned bad, and vice versa. They'd be perfectly welcome at our retreat. Now, granted, they might not have the best accommodations. It might be a tent because, you know, I don't have any more infrastructure to house anybody. But I would do whatever right. I could to help someone.
Nice. Now, these retreats, I assume they vary in size, but what would you consider a decent size as far as land goes?
That's a hard question. It depends what's around it. You know, it doesn't take that much fertile land to grow a lot of crops. Some people think I got to have 50 acres. You don't have to have 50 acres. If you use your resources wisely and you develop your land, as in you're already farming, you're already composting, you're already building your soil, you're already learning how to grow things, you know, that will help you out a lot. But they range from a few acres up to 60 acres.
All right. Now,
use what you have.
Yeah, exactly. Use what you have. I assume that each one of these locations are ideal situations. You know, they have access to water, and you know, I assume that all the, you know, have a water source and all that stuff, have ways to grow food, and that, is that correct?
Correct. Multiple water sources. One is none, two is one, so we go with three. Have backups. Rain catchment to wells. With, you know, generator can run my pump, and if the generator can't work, my solar pump will work. If that doesn't work, I have a hand pump. If that doesn't work, I can go to the, you know, the river, you know. So you're always looking to expand. You know, prepping are tiny little hobbies all put into one. I mean, I can tell you I have a hobby of shooting firearms. That's part of prepping, but it's also a hobby. You know, fishing, that's acquiring food for your family. That's a hobby. From gardening to messing with solar. You know, powering part of your house from the sun is part of prepping, but it's a hobby. So, you know, you take a lot of hobbies, you put them together, and people say, oh, you're just doom and gloom. I'm not doom and gloom. I just got a lot of hobbies.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I mean, I feel the same way. I enjoy doing it, and actually the prepping is one giant hobby. I mean, that's something I enjoy doing. I don't do it out of fear. Although it's smart to be prepared, I also do it just because I enjoy doing it and I enjoy learning new things. I enjoy learning about solar. I enjoy learning about rainwater catchment systems and things like that. So you know, every step in the right direction takes a weight off of my shoulders because I feel more prepared, but it also helps the family, and I get to learn things along the way. So just so I'm clear and I understand this, you didn't set up these three retreats. You know, are you setting up one and then somebody else is setting up the others?
Yes.
So you're not.
I am setting up one. I'm responsible for one retreat.
Gotcha.
Yes.
See that? So that's nice. So, you know, like you said, two is one and one is none. So it's nice that setting up one, and you can also run to somebody else's if you need to, or they can come to yours. So that's great.
Yeah, definitely. It's insurance because you don't know what's going to happen. We have a great network. We meet once a week for 3 hours, and we do good training. We learn from each other. And the more important thing is we build relationships. You know, building that relationship. If you can't put up with that person during the good times, you're definitely not going to put up with that person when you're crowded into a location, when there's hostile people trying to hurt you, when you have a ton of stress upon your life. So you need to find people that you can get along with. And that's the important part about training with them, getting to know them.
Now, I know this is really hard to materialize. Actually, do you have a second? We probably need to hit a break here. Let's go to a break real quick, and then we'll be back with David Kobler, Southern Prep. Thanks.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com. And Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance.
For the past 25 years, Sun Ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine Self-Reliance Exposed. I'm your host, Colorado Ron, and I am on with David Kobler, Southern Prepper One. So, David, you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so back to it. The question that I had was, you know, obviously, you always find things for them to do. There's always chores to do at a retreat. So that's a little harder to answer. But what would be the minimum that you need at a retreat? Because you can't watch 24/7. One person cannot watch.
No. So you're wanting in regards to people, personnel?
And in regards to personnel, what is the minimum that you personally would say, you know, okay, so that's a little too little. You need at least, you know, X amount of more people. What would you say is the minimum required?
Oh, that is a loaded question. As many as possible, as many as your resources can sustain. But, you know, if you have to maintain a 24/7 watch for security, you're going to need a lot of people. It's very hard to stay awake through the night, so you need to be able to switch out people. And if you're all watching security, who is doing some basic farming or homesteading skills? It gets back to, if you put a lot of food back, you know, you can get by with a few less people because you won't have to immediately start growing food. You'll have to worry about security. So the magic number, I have no idea. You need to look at your location. If you're, you know, in a big city, if you're in a suburban area where there's a lot of people around you, you're going to need more people to help you secure your location. 10 to 12, I would say that'd be a minimum you should try to shoot for, and then find people with different skill sets.
Okay. All right. Now, how do you figure out that you're going to be able to get along with these people long term?
It gets with just doing things with them. Like I'm with people right now, I'm canning at the cannery. So, you know, I'm working with them. I get together with them for fun things, barbecues, picnics, you know, do projects together with them, meet with them. You'll quickly find out if you like that person or not. Now, in a worst case situation, you know, you're not going to like everyone, but if you can tolerate that person for the benefit of the whole group, you know, you'll have to do that.
Yeah, there's some people they have to bring a whole lot of skills for me to tolerate.
Yes, definitely. They have to bring skills to the table or resources, and hopefully both.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what are some of the minimum skills that you need for a basic retreat?
I would start off with, in no particular order, but let's first start off with someone medical. You have to have someone in the medical field. EMT, a paramedic, a nurse, a doctor, someone that can take care of the medical needs of your group. Next, I would look at security. Do you have someone that's ex-military involved with, you know, doing some type of security? The best person to get would be definitely someone that's been overseas, has set up a security in a hostile environment. Look at law enforcement people. They have some skill set. Definitely deal with people. And then look at mechanics. People that can maintain generators, vehicles, people that can grow, people that can actually grow a garden, have a farm. And then you're going to need a lot of people with a strong back that are willing to do whatever that needs to be done, that are willing to work long hours. In an emergency, you're going to be working from sun up to sundown. There's no time clock. It is constant. On my homestead, there's constant work to do. I never get it all done.
Man, oh man. Now, do you actually, I don't know if this is another loaded question. Is your retreat something that you're working on as far as, how do I ask this? Sabbath to retreat full time, or is that something that you on and it's off somewhere else? Or is that a question you read on it?
Yeah, I don't really want to answer that. Thank you, though. Yep.
Yeah, no problem. But no problem. I didn't know that one right. So
there's
no
lots of work to do.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
The more you're public and trying to help people, the more you have to alter and change your opset or operational security. You know, before I 18 months ago, I wasn't on YouTube, wasn't really doing anything, but just with local people and friends. So since then, I've changed a lot of things just for the security of my family. But I don't regret anything going public. I feel I'm stronger now than I was when I was very private. My network has expanded astronomically in my area. So I think I'm actually stronger by going public.
Interesting. Interesting. People always complain and say the opposite. Why would you go public? Why would you put all your information out there? And you're saying it's the opposite.
Oh, exact opposite. I know people all over the area. I go out and people bump into me and say, hey, you're Southern Prepper 1. I'm a Prepper 2. I live over here. I find out where they live. I mean, some of them are just miles from my house, and they're serious preppers. So, yes, the environment I live in, the rural country setting, is very conducive to being a prepper. Would I do the same thing if I lived in, Manhattan or in a big city, Atlanta? Would I be out there doing this? Definitely not. But my environment I live in is very conducive to people prepping. There's so many preppers. People say, why are you doing what you're doing out there? People know you. They do, but you know what? I know where 3 or 4 doctors are within 5 to 10 miles from my house that are serious preppers. So now if I have an emergency, I can actually call them on a radio, or I could go to their location and get medical care. So I know I'm a lot stronger being public. But that worked for me. It might not work for you.
Well, absolutely. No, that's a very good point, though. You were able to gather knowledge from people that you never met otherwise. So that's a really good point, actually. So interesting. Okay, so the last question I have for you it goes back to the retreat again. Every retreat is different. I understand that, but what are you obviously water sources and tillable land, farming land and stuff like that. But every environment is different. So, and every budget is different. And I understand that you deal with people with all kinds of different budgets. But let's just throw one out there. Let's say somebody wants to build a retreat for $50,000. Can that be done? And what was the first things you started looking for?
It can be done. You might have to change your location. You might have to go somewhere to find property that's affordable. If you had to start off, yes, you could do it in my area for $50,000. It's not going to be the Taj Mahal, but it will give you water. It will give you some security by being isolated. It will give you some type of structure to keep you out of the weather. But yes, you definitely could, take $50,000 and develop a retreat.
Now, you live in an area where there's lots of rolling hills and green grass and beautiful trees. All of it
goes
that way. I live on the front range. I live in Colorado. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Colorado and the environment here, but I live right smack in the middle, right at the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. So, 30 minutes one way, and I'm in the mountains with trees and rivers and all that other stuff. And 30 minutes the other way, I'm on the I'm in the grasslands that's completely flat like Kansas. So I'm kind of right in the middle. And then, I'm in this busy corridor along the foothills here, which is Denver and Colorado Springs and Fort Collins and all that. So if I was to look for a place, would you say mountains or would you say plains?
I would say mountains. Now, the plains or the flatter area will give you more probably tillable land to grow. but I would say probably mountains for the security aspects to be able to hide. But you'll have to address how can I grow any type of food. If I can't grow food, then I have to increase my stock food. I have to buy more rice and beans.
Interesting. Okay. All right. And when you're looking for a retreat, do you look for places that are open on all four sides, or you'd rather them be closed in on three sides, or how do you look at it? Or does that matter?
It doesn't matter. Every piece of property is unique. Every piece of property you'll have to look at and evaluate, and then use your combat multipliers. What can I use to enhance my security? Can it be fencing? Can it be some type of sensors? Can it be clearing some trees so I have a better field of view around my property? Maybe it's, hey, this is a great piece of property, but our group or our family can't protect it. Maybe I need to find more people, and by finding more people, I will increase my security. So there's so many variables you can do. It doesn't matter what you have. If you have something, you have to work with what you got. Don't make an excuse and say, well, this isn't as good as this guy's place, so I'm not even going to bother making a retreat. Make it. Use what you got.
You know, that's funny because Jackie Clay said the same thing in her interview, was work with what you got. That is so funny that you said the same thing. So,
if you're always looking for that perfect spot, you're never going to find it, and you're never going to move forward.
Interesting. That's a good point. So just get something going and get started. Now, is it too late? Is it ever too late? Well, obviously, there becomes a point when it's too late, but is it too late now to start building? You know, how long does it take to build something like that? I mean, is it, you know, if I start building it now, is it going to take me 5 years or what?
I would start building it now and just keep improving as you go. So if something happens now, at least you'll have some basic things. And it also goes back to resources. I know people that have the resources where they can write the check and they get the job done very quickly. There's other people that have to scrimp and save, do it yourself, you know, and it takes longer. But today is the perfect day to start.
Yep. Nice. Well, I think we'll end it with that. That's a perfect way to end it. Hey, Dave, I really appreciate you coming on. I thank you for supporting the network. I thank you for getting a show on here. We love the information that you have, and I think that you're going to be able to benefit a lot of people by coming in and letting our listeners hear some of this valuable information.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. And I'll let you get back to your canning out there.
I'm going back to canning. Thank you, Ron. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
All right. We'll see you. Well, there you go. That was David Kobler, Southern Prepper 1, and he's based out of the Carolinas area, and he'll have a show here on the network in the next week or so. So that is awesome. We're excited to have him. You could tell he's very knowledgeable via that interview. I actually learned some things on that one myself. So not that I don't learn. I didn't mean it that way. I always learn something, but I learned a lot on that one, and I'm excited to hear his future shows. So tune in, stay with us on Facebook. Also, if you're interested, it's called a Facebook fan page. I think my mother and my wife are my fans right now. So if you guys are interested, go and look up Colorado Ron on Facebook, and I've got a fan Facebook page. So that's awesome. It's kind of cool. It was built for me, and I appreciate it. So anyway, go check that out if you got time. We're pretty excited about our upcoming shows. We're pretty excited about our upcoming expos. Again, you can find us online at selfrelianceexpo.com. You can find us on Facebook, and we constantly update Facebook. So if anything new happens, we post it on Facebook first. And so if you guys have Facebook, go ahead and become a fan. And then that way we can keep you guys updated and keep you in the loop on different things. So I think we're going to head and call this quits. I think we're good to go for this Saturday. It was great having Jackie Clay on. It was great having David Kober on. Hopefully you guys learned a little bit about canning and a little bit about security and retreat building. So I appreciate both of them taking time out of their Saturdays for that. So I guess we'll talk with everybody next week. We will have, again, we'll post it on Facebook, what the show's about and who our guests are for next week. All right, we'll talk with you guys later. Take care.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas! Which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
Yeah.
See me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
We be gone that long, sir?
Well, I hope not. Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.